Earlier this week, jazz musician Art Farmer died of cardiac arrest at the age of 71. Jazz critic Whitney Balliot described Farmer as a gently melodic player whose style is spare, lyrical, logical. Farmer came of age just in time to play with the big bands before many of them were wiped out by post-war musical and economic changes. At the age of 16, he and his brother moved from Phoenix to Los Angeles to play music. But he established his name in the late 50s, playing bop and ballads in small groups. Farmer moved to Vienna in 1968, but returned to the States frequently to perform. Earlier this year, Farmer was named one of the three American Jazz Masters of 1999 by the National Endowment for the Arts. Terry Gross spoke with Art Farmer in 1987. Let's start with an early recording of Farmer's. This is The Very Thought of You, recorded in 1958.
I think your ballad playing is really just exquisite.
Thank you.
And I wonder how you started gravitating to ballads, because it's something really that a lot of bop players either don't do or don't do very well.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me like you have a chance to think when you're playing a ballad. That fast tempo is not pulling you along, so you can take time and really sort of sculpture the note just the way you want to get it. You know, you don't have to move on to the next thing until you're exactly ready to do it. And there must be some other reason than that, but I really can't think of what it is right now. I like to hear ballads played.
Me too.
I like to hear someone who can play one well. And at the time that I came up, well, the criterion of how good a player was how good he could play a ballad. You know, regardless of how much he was into with the fast stuff or, you know, you take a guy like John Coltrane, for instance. Well, it's always, yes, but can he play a ballad? And yes, John Coltrane can play a ballad. And Charlie Parker, yes, but can he play a ballad? Yes, Charlie Parker could play a ballad. You know, that's how they were judged by the older guys. You know, that's where you take your hat off.
Gee, you know, I'm almost surprised to hear that, because I assume that that people would be really showing off how fast they could play a lick.
No, the older guys say, look, you have to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell a story, paint a picture. And even Dizzy says that, you know, that's the whole thing.
You mentioned before that when you and your brother moved to Los Angeles, you met a lot of musicians there like Charlie Parker, Eric Dolphy, Hampton Hawes. Were they very influential to you? Because suddenly you had peers who were playing jazz. You were pretty isolated in Phoenix, and it doesn't sound like there was much of a jazz scene or a jazz community.
No, we were all influenced actually by the same. We were influenced by the people who had already found their thing. You know, like Bird and Miles and Dizzy. Those were the people that were influenced. Bud Powell and Monk and people like that. They'd already found their way, and they were the ones that were influencing us. And we were, at that time, we weren't really thinking about trying to find our own thing. We were just trying to play, more or less trying to imitate them at that particular time.
Did that work for you? At one point did you start thinking about finding your own voice?
Well, it seems like a gradual thing happened where you just sort of segue into your own voice. You don't just one day, at least when I say you, I mean me. I didn't just one day wake up and say, well, that's it, I'm going to go for myself. You know, it wasn't like that. It was just like over a period of time, you get an idea of do this or do that, you know, and then it would wind up to be somewhere. You can always see where there were little deviations, because when I was first influenced as a jazz player, it was in my main influences were Fats Navarro and Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, and I would take from all of them, but I was eventually able to add a note here and there.
Did you like them personally?
Yeah, sure. I liked all three of them, and I still do.
Didn't Miles Davis used to rent your horn?
Yeah, he used to rent it.
Wait, was his in Hawk?
Yeah. At one time, he didn't have a horn, or he couldn't get to his horn, so he would rent mine, and he would rent mine. There used to be another guy. I can't remember his name right now. I used to use his horn. So a guy used to work for Prestige. But he would come by and want to take my horn, so I would go with him, you know, just for safety.
What would happen if you and Miles Davis both had a gig on the same night?
Oh, well, that happened, and he expected me to cancel my gig.
So you had to tell him no?
I told him that I wasn't in the horn rent business, you know, but he's never at a loss for words. He really insisted. He said, look, man, I'm paying you for the horn. I said, yeah, but, you know, that's not my business. I want to play too. You know, so you would think that he would say, yeah, well, I understand, sure. He said, man, I didn't know you were like that.
Jazz musician Art Farmer speaking with Terry Gross from a 1987 interview. More in a minute. This is Fresh Air. We continue Terry's interview with jazz musician Art Farmer, recorded in 1987. He died earlier this week.
When you were starting out in New York, you knew Lester Young there, right?
Yes.
He had this, I mean, not that I've ever heard him speak, but I've certainly read about it, and he had this kind of hip language of his own that he would use. Would you ever feel almost square by comparison because he was such the consummate hipster?
No, well, you see, in the environment, what would be called the jazz environment, there were ways of us talking to each other that so no one would know what we were talking about. For one reason or the other, with whatever there might be something that people shouldn't know what we were talking about, or maybe some things. If it was money, well, then I remember working with one band where the money was so little, we didn't want people to know what it was, you know. So if you ask someone, well, how much are we making tonight? If it was $20, which it wasn't, then they wouldn't say 20, they would say line 20. So if someone hears that, they would say, well, line 20, well, that could mean like, maybe that means 200 or 40, or who knows, you know. Well, that was just one example. But Lester Young, he really carried out everything he said was like that. He never left that hardly. He had, when he was just talking to us, he had his own way of talking, and we just had to figure out what he meant. If he said one lung, well, that would mean one course. You know, after you've been there for one night or two, you know his words. Half a lung, George Washington. If he says yetis, well, then that means leave it alone.
I guess you couldn't very well say, what exactly does that mean, Lester?
Well, that wouldn't be too hip, you know. You just sort of let it sink in.
For over 20 years now, your instrument has really been flugelhorn, which is subtly different from a trumpet in ways I will ask you to explain.
Well, it has a bigger sound. My first love is still the trumpet, but the sound that I was trying to get on the trumpet, I can get it more consistently on the flugelhorn. And every, regardless of what note you play, it starts with the sound. And if I'm not satisfied with the sound that I hear in my own ears, then it sort of has a way of blocking my my thinking. So I can't improvise that fluently unless I'm satisfied with the first sound. So I prefer to play the flugelhorn for improvisation. However, if I'm working with a big band in the trumpet section, then I take the trumpet out.
I noticed before that you were fidgeting with a mouthpiece.
Oh, yeah.
Do you keep one in your pocket all the time?
No, but this one, I don't leave it any place because the mouthpiece is the part that's closest to you and is irreplaceable. You can always find a horn. I would hate to lose the horn, but I would hate twice as much to lose the mouthpiece.
It sounds really odd considering the mouthpiece is this little
yeah.
thing and the horn is like the really expensive
yeah,
yeah,
that reminds
part of
the instrument. That's the story. Like Nat Adderley was in New York. He used to live in New York, and one night he got robbed, and the people took his horn, you know, and robbed on the street. They took his horn, took all of his money, and he told the guy, he said, "Look, man, look, may I please ask you if you would just give me my mouthpiece?" He said, "I've been playing that mouthpiece ever since I've been playing. If you would please just give me the mouthpiece." And this guy said, "What? You want the mouthpiece? Well, oh, you want that old thing? Oh, take it. That ain't nothing. You can have it."
Story.
He was so glad to get it. He said, "You can take the money, take the horn, but just give me the mouthpiece." Well, that's the way I feel, you know.
Art Farmer, it's really just been so great to meet you. Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
For coming today.
Thank you, Terry.
Art Farmer speaking with Terry Gross in 1987. Farmer died earlier this week. He was 71.